This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Okay. All right. In 3, 2, and 1. It is episode 7 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. David Foote and Patrick Williams here. And another big show lined up as we delve into some of the headlines and stories from around the American Hockey League. This week, we are going to revisit a former guest already on the show. Jerry Cantlin will join us on the line from Hartford. And we will also check back in with the Laval Rocket, but we're going straight to the source this week, Pat. We're getting head coach Joel Bouchard in an interview, and I know we talked about Laval a couple weeks ago, but anytime you get a chance to get a guy like Joel Bouchard, you take it.
Absolutely. Joel Bouchard, one of the hot coaching prospects in the entire American Hockey League right now. He came in last year to Laval after a wildly successful career, coaching career in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and obviously a longtime pro as well as a player. And he's a very interesting interview. He's intense. He's intense whether you're talking to him at 9:30 in the morning at practice or after a game or frankly any other time. But he's really come in there and done a great job. Has Laval right in the thick of the North Division race, and excited to hear what he has to say, for sure.
Excited to find out what he thinks about the turnaround of his team and what he attributes that to. Speaking of coaches, let's get right into the discussion this week. And a big headline across the National Hockey League had a pretty big trickle-down impact on the American Hockey League as well, with Sheldon Keefe being promoted from the Toronto Marlies to the Toronto Maple Leafs, taking over for Mike Babcock. And I don't think anybody who covers this league, you know, for sure, and especially the North Division, is surprised at all to find out that Sheldon Keefe, was rather easily named to the job. Obviously, all the good work he's done as the head coach of the Marlies since 2015-16. He has his history with Kyle Dubas in the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds organization prior to that, and the results don't lie. He has done an incredible job with the Marlies in his jump to the pro level.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, this whole move felt inevitable. Him and Dubas have been a kind of a package deal, like you said, going all the way back to their days with the Sioux. And the interesting thing I was thinking the other day, right after the whole news came down, and it was a couple years back, there was the concern slash fear around the Leafs, around the sort of the whole Toronto hockey scene, that what do we do if, how long can we keep Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe at the American Hockey League level? They're having all the success. Other NHL teams are certainly their interest is perking up. And here they are 2 years later, and they're together again, reunited very closely with the Leafs, and it's it all worked out in the end. If you're the Leafs, you were able to keep both Dubas, one of the bright, obviously young management prospects, and really isn't even a prospect anymore, but one of the bright young faces in hockey, and then a guy like Keefe, who worked his way up. His playing career was ended early by an injury. He went to Junior A. Worked his way up from there, worked his way into the OHL, had great success there, and then became an American Hockey League coach. And I know some detractors will say, the Marlies always have a good team. They always have a lot of veterans. And that's true up to a point. But, in this league, it's difficult sometimes, even when you have veterans, simply because a lot of players in this league, their agendas extend beyond, the needs of the team, and they're looking for opportunities elsewhere. So to get everybody on the same page, and I think even more so to keep everybody on the same page over the course of a long season, really has been Sheldon Keefe's one of his biggest achievements there. And I think the second thing is just every player that I would say started with him ended up a better player having been with him. So I think the NHL crowd, the media up there, the fans up there, they're getting kind of a taste of what all of us down here have known for a while. And just that Sheldon Keefe is a heck of a coach. And he's won everywhere he's gone. And, I'm really, really intrigued to see what he can do with this Leafs team. There's obviously loads of talent there. Now it's just a matter of pulling it all together and getting everybody kind of pulling in the same direction. If he can do that, you know, for a kid born in the GTA, what a story that would be. So it's a fun story. Really interested to see where he can take this team, both the course of this season and long term. But he's already done great job for the entire Leaf system, and now he really gets to work at the top of the heap here. So, but it really goes to show you just what the American Hockey League, how crazy this league can be sometimes. Because when this whole news came down, the Marlies actually were about 3 hours away from playing a home game that night against Laval.
Yeah,
and they had to scramble. And here was a team that they were playing great. They weren't having any problems, but the NHL teams. Problems quickly can become your problems.
Yeah, they
and they had to scramble. They had to get on track and call an audible with 3 hours to go before a game, and they were able to do that. And they had a great weekend. They won that Laval game, and then they handled the Manitoba Moose, who had been really hot. So this Marlies team is rolling, and Sheldon Keefe has left them in very good shape for whoever eventually comes in full time and takes over.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned they won the night that the news broke. They were on a three-game winning streak, heading into that point, and then they picked up back-to-back wins over Manitoba since the coaching change. So things are, obviously trickling down as far as it being big news, but not really having much of an effect on what's happening on the ice for the Toronto Marlies. And if you are Kyle Dubas and company, that's exactly how you would like it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want your prospects to be in as stable an environment as possible. And I think that's the thing for Leafs prospects, really ever since the Dubas era started, even going back to 2014 when he first came there, it was just that it was a, they want to eliminate any excuses that a player could possibly have. So they want to give them every resource they can find, be it coaching, be it nutrition, good travel, whatever it is, they'll give it to their players. They take great care of them there, and it pays off. And obviously, I mean, you see why it's such a destination, for veterans in this league. I mean, if you have an opportunity to play for the Marlies, most guys are going to jump at that chance because you get to play for a top-notch system like the Leafs and the Marlies have, and then you get to live in a big city, and they tend to pay well as well. So it's a very attractive package if you're an AHL player, and players take notice. And ever since Sheldon Keefe came in there at the start of 2015-16 season, he was one win shy of 200. So you had a pair of 54 win seasons. You won a Calder Cup in 2018. I mean, you go right down the list, both in terms of winning and development. He checked all the boxes, and going forward, it's going to be they're in good hands. Whoever comes in here, and I think this Marlies team is looking dangerous once again. Every year in and year out, they're a force in this league.
Who they bring in is still a question, I suppose, but the trio of assistant coaches, Rob Davison, Jack Han, and AJ McLean, have done an all right job through the first week or so. By the time this podcast gets out, it'll be a week since the news broke. So I'm also interested to see how long they wait until they name a new head coach, if they put the interim tag on one of those three guys, or if they bring in somebody fresh, or if they just roll with what they got because it's working. It will be interesting to see what Lawrence Gilman and Dubas and the rest of the Toronto organization decide to do.
Yeah, I think one thing with that whole system is they're very deliberate in their decision making. That you don't generally see them make kind of knee-jerk decisions. So I think they'll take their time, make sure they get the right candidate. It's a little bit more complicated now, being middle of the season. There aren't a ton of guys right now who are in between jobs, but certainly, I mean, this is one of the premier jobs anywhere outside the National Hockey League anywhere, and I think there would be no shortage of interest of coaches who would want to have an opportunity to work in that system. Everybody can look and see what being there did for Sheldon Keefe, success attracts success. So I won't be surprised to see them. You can get a lot of interest, but I think they'll take their time. I think, especially with the way the Marlies are rolling, there's really no need to, shake things up too much. Maybe players have had enough change for now, and you take your time with the decision and make sure you make a good one, and see how it goes. But for right now, they're rolling. They have a 3-3 this weekend, but they have a little bit of time off this week, to get some practice time in and get some things settled. And so it's a bit of a roller coaster, but that's life in the American Hockey League, right? I mean, not only do you have your own problems, you have your parent team's problems. So yeah, you're always kind of trying to balance your needs and the parent team's needs. That was a textbook example of life in the American Hockey League for sure.
Yeah, the eternal struggle in this league, trying to balance what the parent club needs and winning at the AHL level, because as we've discussed on this show, winning is extremely important still in the development stages of young players. Speaking about winning, the Milwaukee Admirals continue to do so. We talked a bit about them on the show last week and the heater that they've been riding. Well, they've now won 10 in a row. They're the best team in the league. And I don't know if there's much sign at all of them slowing down here moving forward, because, again, we saw them in Belleville a couple weeks ago. And, they just look like a well-oiled machine at this point. Winning 10 games in a row is not easy at any level, let alone at this level where there is so much, back and forth and up and down. But they're winning fairly handily at the same time. They've had a handful of one-goal games, but they continue to rely on Daniel Carr, who we talked about last week, on this 10-game win streak that they're on. I think he's got 4 or 5 game-winning goals, and you can't understate the value of a player like that.
No, and unfortunately for Milwaukee, he was called up yesterday. Now that knowing how things are, he could be back tomorrow. He could be back next week. So you never know for sure. But he's been an absolute force. I mean, if you thought he was going to have a little bit of a letdown after making Nashville's roster coming from training camp and then ending up back in the American Hockey League after being the MVP here last season, that never happened. He was a force almost really from the get-go, and hit a 10-game point streak at the time of his recall, and just is more than a point per game. And I mean, he's one of those players that, frankly, is his skill levels above the caliber of this league. And so he'll get another shot in Nashville. We'll see how he's doing. But 21 points in 16 games. He missed the first 2.5 weeks of the season, and yet he leaves tied for, I think, 4th in league scoring going into the week. So he's a force, and that Milwaukee power play is clicking at 31%. So they are on a nice roll, 10 in a row. They go into host Manitoba Moose on Wednesday night, they can make it 11 in a row. But they can win anyway. They can pull out a one goal game, a low scoring game, or they can blow teams out. I mean, they blew out a really good Grand Rapids team 5-0 this past weekend. So, they beat Iowa in the shootout last week. So they're doing it all different ways. It's a really good team. I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses in their lineup. I think really for them, the biggest challenge will be trying to keep the roster intact. But, if they can keep it mostly intact, they're going to be a force, and they're already out to the top spot in the entire league and 31 points going into the week. So they're looking really dangerous. I think that division, that central division, every year is kind of a grind anyway. And now you have a team like this such a good start. That division is going to be even harder now.
Yeah.
There's going to be some good teams that miss the playoffs this year.
Absolutely. And I mean, you look at their upcoming schedule over the next, 4 or 5 games, all in the division. Manitoba and San Antonio are a couple of teams that can beat you on any night. We talked in depth about Manitoba last week, and then they've got a doubleheader in Texas against the Stars coming up, who may be at the bottom of the pile right now, but managed to snap their losing streak. And as we've seen in this league before, sometimes one win is all it takes to turn things around. And even if they don't go on, you know, a winning streak to equal the amount that they lost in a row, they could have some confidence and maybe put up a fight against a team like Milwaukee that comes into their building.
Yeah, and I don't think this Texas team is the type of team that should have, you know, had a losing streak the way they did and shouldn't be, you know, four wins in their first 19 games. I think the talent there is too good. They just haven't been able to get on track, and their goals against has been a real issue. So if they can learn to keep the puck out of the net, they should be okay. I think Texas, if they can manage it, I mean, the biggest challenge I think for them now will be to maybe dig themselves out of this hole. They're already 10 points below the playoff line. But if you look at your top four, that's a solid group. And then you have Grand Rapids right outside. You have Rockford, and then you have Chicago Wolves, who have actually gone on a pretty big slide here, 2-8 in their last 10. You have to think at some point this is a team where there's still some guys that went to last year's Calder Cup final. You have to think that they're going to eventually turn it around as well. So that division is going to be probably the top one in the league when all said and done. Anybody that's, can try to pick that division at this point, good luck, because, I count probably at least three, if not maybe four teams that should be pretty solid teams when all said and done who will miss the playoffs. I think that, like I said, that Texas team is better than their record shows. And I think, like you said, once you get that first win and kind of, snap yourself out of that that funk, you can really turn it around quickly. I mean, that's the thing with this league. It's a league of streaks. It's a league where you play games in bunches, and you have call-ups, and you have all these elements that can really change things quickly. So if they can get on a roll here, they could end up being back in the swing of things pretty quickly. They have three home games again this week, two of them will be all three, I should say. They play Milwaukee, and then they play a pair against Iowa, so that's not an easy week. There's nothing like maybe some good competition to get a team to wake up and get back on track. And that's what we'll see with the Texas Stars. But top to bottom, that division is a bear. And I don't think it's going to be easy for any team to make the playoffs.
No, absolutely not. Another team in the East that has gotten back into the hunt a little bit is the Belleville Senators. And we talk so much about roster movement and balancing the needs of the parent club with the AHL club. Well, they were in a situation where it didn't matter what the AHL club needed because of all the injuries up in Ottawa. And Belleville went into last weekend with a handful, literally, of defensemen on the roster. And the majority of that handful were guys either on ECHL call-ups or PTOs. And nobody really gave them a shot last weekend on the road. And what did they do? They go out and they pick up a pair of wins in Binghamton, which has not been a friendly building for them in their short history, and in Lehigh Valley, which is not a friendly building for pretty well any team that goes in there. And now here they go into this weekend where, again, they play one at home, two on the road, but they've got a chance with a Utica loss and a win to get right back into the playoff picture. So that's just how quickly things can change in this league. And while I mentioned the Utica Comets, you may have seen my tweet if you follow at Footy on the Air. And, of course, Pat's at P. Williams NHL. The Utica Comets are going to don some Vancouver Canuck-esque 90s throwbacks, and they might take the cake as top alternate jersey in the American Hockey League this season. And I'm sure some teams still have to put some out, but I might put a bid in on one because they are outstanding. Looking, the old black, orange, and yellow Vancouver Canucks jerseys from the 90s. They're just pristine.
Yeah, you were the first person I thought of when I saw that announcement. I was like, footy's going to be all over this one, as a logo and a uniform and jersey guy. It's a pretty cool look. They managed to pull off both the old school Canucks logo, but make it kind of a Comets feel to it. The streaking lines forming the Comet. It's pretty cool what they were able to do. Very creative. And I would say, if you looked at the overall look for across the board, the Utica Comets have a really nice uniform palette and color palette because you have that classic green and blue. And then you have this old new version of the Canucks of the 80s and 90s. So it's pretty cool. And I'm really excited to see that, you know, I always find that the real test of a jersey is what it looks like on the ice. And I'm excited to see that on American Hockey League ice. I was looking back the last time that the Canucks logo or colors were on display were the 93-94 Hamilton Canucks. So it's been a while, and it'll be cool to see that look, on the ice again. And there's some really cool looks this year. Tucson Roadrunners debuted their third jersey this past weekend, based on the 90s style of the old Phoenix Coyotes.
Those are good too.
A lot going on. Yeah, there's a lot going on this year in the world of AHL fashion, and I always think it's neat the way teams in this league are able to take the parent team's look, kind of tweak it, give it its own kind of little twist, and make it work for their needs. And we have a pretty nice selection of jerseys this year, for sure.
Yeah, that's the key for me. Take what the parent club has and kind of put your own spin on it, and that's the best way to move forward. We'll throw a retweet out at Around the A-Pod on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram as well with that jersey and maybe some others that we really like. And don't forget to weigh in and interact with us as well. Let us know what you think. Some of your favorites, again, at Around the A-Pod on the social feeds. Again, a reminder, coming up on the show, we're going to chat with Jerry Cantlin, who covers the Hartford Wolfpack. We're also going to speak with the head coach of the Laval Rocket, Joel Bouchard. And in a moment, a quick thought on some emerging defensive prospects from Eastern Conference NHL affiliates. But before we get to that, Pat, some sad news to touch on here. As a longtime media member of the Hershey Bears, Greg Mace passed away this week. He was the 2006 Ellery Award winner for media excellence in covering the American Hockey League. And obviously has to be a big loss for the league as a whole, but especially those hockey fans in Hershey.
Yeah, it's the league's most storied franchise. They go back to the first season in the American Hockey League was 1938. So this is a team with some real history to it, some real culture. And, there's a hardcore fan base around that team. And he was a big part of it. He was there for 40 years covering that team for the local television news affiliate from ABC in a top 50 U.S. market. So that's not easy for teams at the American Hockey League level to kind of get that kind of support and that coverage, especially in a market like that. He was always a big champion of what the AHL was all about. And I also knew him to be somebody that really would mentor a lot of young media members, a lot of people who've gone on to some really big things at other networks and at ESPN and in different sports. They were mentored by him, and I met him a number of times, and a really nice guy, really first-class guy. I would just describe him as a real gentleman, kind of a bit of a throwback in that regard, and a guy that always was kind of there first and foremost for the Bears. And, he covered all the big things like Major League Baseball and college football in the States, but he also always made time for the American Hockey League. So a real first-class guy, and I thought it was neat that the Bears one of the ways they're going to honor him is they signed a TV deal with his station that he was working on before he passed, to have some of their games televised in that market. So nice little tribute to him. And, it's a big loss for this league. It's hard to break through a lot of the noise out there. There's a lot of competition for people's attention these days. And but he was always able to really kind of champion the American Hockey League. And he's definitely going to be missed. He's a real guy with some roots in this league. And I know he always told me some of his great stories. I mean, he went back to the 1960s in this league. He actually grew up as a Baltimore Clippers fan way back in the 60s. So he had some cool stories that he passed on to me over the years. And he was always just a friendly face. And he's a big loss for this league. And I'm glad to see the Bears are giving him a really nice tribute, and they've really gone out of their way to help out his family and, you know, help, you know, everybody through that situation. So, but it is it's a very difficult situation for the team and for his family, obviously. So, you know, I guess just our thoughts go to him and his family. I know his son pretty well, and, you know, it's a big loss, no doubt.
Yeah, we're obviously sending our best to the Mace family and, you know, all the folks around, you know, the Hershey Bears who were, you know, friends of his and interact with him, you know, on a day-to-day basis. It's a big loss for sure for that community. Let's move on here. Lastly, before we get to Joel Bouchard, you did a piece this week on NHL.com, as you are one to do. We talked about goaltenders the last couple of weeks, and now we're moving up the ice a little bit to the blue line. You looked at some of the top prospects for Eastern Conference affiliates on defense. And again, we will leave the good listeners to find your article on NHL.com and the AHL notebook. But of the four or five guys that you looked at this week, who is the one that you think stands out the most?
For me, it's Jake Bean. He's a Carolina Hurricanes prospect. He had a fantastic year last year. He's 13th overall pick back in 2016, and comes in last year's member of the all-rookie team, 44 points in 70 games, and plays a big role for them when they went on their Calder Cup run. He's back this year, and I'm intrigued by his situation in the sense that he kind of walked into the perfect situation last year with such a good team, and now this is a team this season that's struggling quite a bit, and I'm intrigued to see him now where he's one of the guys, and he's going to be asked to do a lot and carry a lot of the weight for that team, for a team that's trying to find their way. So, you know, you kind of got the best situation last year. Now you get a little bit of these challenges and roadblocks this year. So I think if you can get different experiences at this level and different types of roles and expectations, it's really good. But he's a guy, every time I speak with him, he's just a smart kid. And that's the first thing his coaches will tell you, whether it's Mike Vellucci last year or Ryan Warsawski this year. It's just his IQ is just really through the roof. Smart guy. You can tell he's smart on and off the ice. And, you know, he plays that way. And I think maybe give him one more year in the American Hockey League, maybe just to polish a few things in his game. But I think he's going to be a part of the Carolina Hurricanes NHL roster for a long time to come, because I think he's that good, and he's that composed, he's that polished in his game. So there's a lot of good young prospects at the blue line position this league. I think this is a position where the AHL definitely you know, has a lot of success in developing young players. But Jake Bean, certainly from the Eastern Conference, is really the guy for me that stands out for sure.
We'll have more on the Western Conference likely next week as Pat continues his AHL notebook on NHL.com. But let's shift gears. Again, we mentioned off the top of the show that last week or the week before, we did speak about the Laval Rocket. Julian McKenzie joined us from Place Belle, and it was a little bit noisy because the warm-up was going on, but we had a chance this week to catch up with Joel Bouchard as the Rocket visited Belleville, and he joins us next on Around the A. Coach, thanks for taking some time for us.
No problem.
Just wanted to talk about the start to the season so far. It's been an excellent run for your team since the start of the season, a bit of a turnaround compared to the last two. To what do you attribute the change in the start?
Well, I thought last year we did really good between you and I. I thought our play was really up to par. 10-year coaching is one of the group I've been the most proud of. Our talent was so low in experience versus other team. We're the youngest team in the league by almost 2 years, so you got to figure it out that the 30th team in the league was almost 2 years older than we were. And I felt we were in every game. I thought we were the better team on the ice a lot, but our lack of talent showed. But that work ethic was there from day one last year. And this year, we've had a few more players, more experience. It wasn't great at the beginning. A lot of guys were disappointed about being sent down, but turned out might be a really good thing for them. And after a few weeks here, actually since the game we played here a few weeks ago, I see a big change in the mindset, and guys realizing that it's for their own good to play the right way. So it's not perfect, obviously, but this is where we are for the last, you know, if you say 16 months since I've been coach. I like the way we handle ourselves.
How does that early success kind of change things mood-wise around the room? Do you see any difference in your players?
Well, I mean, the first few weeks were tougher for some guys. So obviously, winning cures a lot of things. But I got to say, last year, even to the last weekend, we looked like a team that was going to the playoff. The way the guys worked hard, they were appreciative of the ice time they got, the opportunity. So I always try to keep the vibe with winning environment, even if, you know, at time last year we didn't win. I felt the vibe was really good. This year, we won a few games at the beginning, and I didn't like the vibe because I felt we were winning the wrong way. But the last month, I would say guys have been really good into realizing, you know, not only that we play the right way here, we have a chance to win, but for their career to go up and be playing the right way in their overall game. And the adjustment that we work with them help them.
When you talk about playing the right way, in your mind, in your coaching philosophy, what does that mean?
The best you can be when you have the puck, the best you can be when you don't have the puck. I think we try to over-slice it. We try. Obviously, some guys will have more talent than others. But for me, defending, there's no talent to it. It's commitment, it's investment, it's doing it. And I feel some guys maybe don't do it as well because they don't apply themselves as well. Sure. Not because they're not able to. And I understand that scoring goal is a, there's a fine touch there, and I wasn't a goal scorer, so I know that it's tough to score goal, and I respect that. But I don't think because you score a few goals in the AHL, that allows you to not defend very well. And this is a rally where some guys goes in the NHL and they come back down. I mean, in every organization, we see guys that are great AHL player, and they cannot play in the NHL. And my job is to make sure that Claude and Mark have option if guys get called up, and they can trust them. So we don't get called up. You know, we had a bit of a, we had talks, we stuff that I didn't like in about his game. And that's why he was, you know, maybe not in the lab last year. He came in down and after a few games, you know, figured it out and worked the right way. And I think he's been doing good since he's been up. But it's a work in progress. And for me, if you want to don't play the right way, score 40 goals. That will, you can do whatever you want. If you score 40, do whatever you want on the ice in the NHL. And probably in our league, you can get away with it a little bit. Yeah. If you're going to score just 15, 17, 18 goals, play the right way.
Makes sense to me. You mentioned experience and having a fair bit of it in your lineup this year. I wanted to ask about Carl Alzner specifically. It's a pretty big story, the fact that he's got so much NHL experience, but here he is in the AHL. What does having a guy like that in the locker room do for the group, and how do you think he's handled being in the American Hockey League?
Well, it can go both ways, obviously, because it's not, you know, what he signed for when he signed with the Montreal Canadiens. That being said, he was with us last year for part of the year, and this year, since the beginning, he's been great. He's a good person. You have to understand Carl Alzner is as good as a person as you're going to see around. He's a nice guy. He's nice with people in the bus, in the street, with his teammate. He's respectful of everybody, and this is what I like about him, is he understands what we're doing here, and he's a good guy about it. That being said, he's got a big part of you know, our game plan, meaning that he defends very well. He plays hard, and he can be a good example for some of our guys. So, you know, it's a fine line between him being here and just, you know, being a good guy, and him being here and being a good guy, but helping and working on his game also, so you never know what can happen. You know, it's not like a guy like that can never be called up either.
Of course. I wanted to get some thoughts on some of your younger guys as well. Of course, Caden Primeau in net. A guy like Ryan Poehling, obviously, in the Montreal market, has a lot of eyes on him. What have you made of their performances early?
Well, I feel Ryan was, you know, had a lot of eyes on him, a lot of people, a lot of expectation for a guy to come out of NCAA as a 20-year-old. You know, he's no older than the other guy coming out of the CHL. He's born 1999, and he had a great game, his first NHL game last year, 3 goals plus the winning goal in shootout. So he got hurt at camp. I think it's a lot to handle for a young man. So we have a bit of a reset with him, where I think he's been really good the last week. He was good last weekend. It's an adjustment for him, obviously. And I've, you know, said vocally to the media to kind of back off and leave him alone last week, because I think we can work with him and coach him. But he's a good guy. He wants to do well. He's no different than any other guys that you guys have in Belleville that just come out of different, you know, junior caliber on the world. He needs to adjust and he needs to see what works for him, and you see that there's stuff that he can't get away in the pro hockey, AHL or NHL. And for Caden, it's been adjusting very well. He's really calm. He's a professional. He understands the process of becoming a pro. He understands the process of becoming a pro goalie and to head to the NHL. You know, he's been handling everything very well, the goods, and when he had adversity, he's been managing that well. So our goal is to let them play, coach them a little bit, guide them, you know, give them the time to feel their own and to adjust from being a student athlete to a full-time hockey player. But they're good kids, no problem with them.
And lastly, obviously, you've coached a long time at you know, the major junior level now in the American Hockey League, with the goal in both leagues really to develop players for the next level. What are the keys to doing that?
Well, I think it's different. Junior, you develop and coach to you know, a different way. You build your program. You have guys for 3, 4, 5 years sometimes. And when you head to the pro AHL league, there's no league like it. It's a league of performance, second development first. You still play to win, but you coach differently here than you would in junior or in the NHL, because there's so many moving parts. There's so many short-term goals and longer-term goals, and then you need to make sure you push on the right button at the right time. That doesn't mean that you play to lose, but you definitely don't make... I don't make the decision right now that I would make if I would coach in junior in the NHL. It would be a lie to say I make the exact same decision. I coach the exact same way, because I don't. Yeah. But I understand when you take that job. I've played in the NHL long enough. I understand the bigger picture. And we always play to win. We always play to be competitive. We always try to keep a winning environment, a competitive, a high-end working environment. That being said, there's adjustment that we need to do as coaches, and I think we all realize that around the AHL for all the reason that we know. But it's a fun challenge, and you know what? I mean, for us here, it's fun to see our young guy growing, our young guy that we work at development camp, at rookie camp, and then you get a chance to coach sometime for a few games or a year. And you look at a guy like Cale Fleury for us last year that, you know, took so many strides and then was able to crack the lineup already this year. So there's always, you know, in Charudon that get called up and do well when he's up there. And, you know, this is part of our job. But as long as there's a hockey puck and a scoreboard, I'll coach to win. But in the AHL, you have to do it a certain way.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network and everywhere else you get your podcast. Big thanks to Joel Bouchard for his time earlier this week as the Laval Rocket visited the Belleville Senators. Time to head back to Hartford. Jerry Cantlin is on the line with us, so we spoke to him back on episode 1 or 2 of the show. And glad to have you back, Jerry. Thanks for doing this again.
Oh, Dave, it's actually a pleasure. Wonderful. Always a good time to talk hockey.
It's always a good time to talk hockey. Let's talk a little bit about the Hartford Wolfpack, because I think when we had talked last, we were talking about expectations on the team and you know, perhaps how well they could do. And here we are 20 or so games in, and they're leading the Atlantic Division and looking pretty good.
Certainly has, Dave. Pat, it's a big change. We haven't seen this in about 6 years. The team was atop the AHL for a better part of the last 6 weeks, and has shown an awful lot of different sides of the team than we've been seeing in the last few years. Particularly the fact this was a group that knew how to handle tough situations. They could get themselves, sometimes they were behind a little bit, but they were able to find ways to win games late, tie game late, get into overtime and shootouts, which they've probably had too many that they would like to have, but it's a sign that this is a team that was able to handle that sort of pressure and that adversity, which, you know, this is part of what going through the regular season is. If you want to make the playoffs, you got to learn how to play in tight situations, and he's certainly been able to do that. And quite frankly, the goaltending has been just fantastic.
Igor Shesterkin is fun to watch, and I know we want to get some thoughts on him in a couple minutes. But how much has Chris Knobloch played into the success with, you know, his presence behind the bench? A guy who had so much success with the Erie Otters in the OHL, and now is, you know, trying to translate that at the AHL level.
For him, it's been he's as much as the players making an adjustment and development to the American Hockey League. He'd never coached at this level before. So it's a different thing. And there's also real kind of a very different coaching arrangement. He's the head coach, but really it's a very team effort. You know, Gord Murphy, of course, has God knows how much experience the guy's got, you know, between playing the game and coaching in the game. Guy's been around forever, and guys love it. I can tell you, Ryan Lindgren, before his ascension up to New York, he was coffee every day asking Gord Murphy, and that coaching has really worked out. And for Knobloch, he's found a way to balance all these things. So it's a new vein with some of the younger guys. He can appreciate, as you said, Dave, you know, he's been in the Ontario Hockey League. He gets an idea of where guys are coming from in a junior setting. So he's got that idea. You know, you do have some college guys as well. But when you're able to relate with that particular age group, how they work, how they think, is a big part of doing this. And it is much more of a cooperative effort. And the Rangers have put a lot more into the coaching staff than the last few years. And that's nothing against their predecessors, Keith McCambridge and Ken Jernander, but they simply have given them more to work with, more tools. And that's not really the standard of the American Hockey League. It's not like when I first started doing it, Dave, there was literally one coach. That's it. There was no assistant, no video coach, no goalie coach. You were the coach.
Yeah.
So much has changed in that regards, and I think that the Wolfpack are really thriving under having implemented this increase in their coaching staff, and Knobloch's certainly at the top of the pyramid here.
Jerry, what do you think has driven that change in philosophy? Like you said, there is a lot more resources being poured into the development system than there has been in past years. I know that. Certainly when Jernander and McCambridge were there, like you said, they didn't have a whole lot to work with, and now that's much different this year.
There's no question there's been such a huge changeover when the Madison Square Garden, you got John Davidson has come in from Columbus. JD has certainly made Hartford a priority. They had to look at where our development, where are younger players coming from. We're not getting many of them, and quite frankly, the last 5 years, it's just gotten progressively worse. It just simply wasn't there. Part of the blame is the Ranger organization. They went out and, you know, signed a lot of guys, traded picks. So the cupboard was kind of bare. So they had to go out and signing guys, and they weren't getting the best guys. I'll be honest, some of the player evaluation wasn't very good. And they simply just didn't have some of the resources that other organizations were adding, those extra assistant coach, the video coach. And teams were just, you know, speeding ahead of them in that regard. So all those factors just led to a very poor product on the ice. They just weren't competitive. They weren't fun. I have to be honest, the last 6 weeks of last season was one of the worst I've ever experienced over, you know, having the privilege of over, you know, a quarter century of covering the AHL and seeing that was stunning. It was sad because this is such a proud organization that has such a strong history. Certainly something had to be done, and, you know, kudos to the Rangers. They've identified making some of those changes in coaching staff and evaluation and of players. And so far, you know, through the quarter pole of the season, they certainly can say they've had their investment has been well paid off so far in Hartford.
And what about their veteran core? I mean, that's been an issue for a number of years, getting the right mix of veterans in there. And this is a team that hasn't done that in the past. What makes this group
well, that was the thing too, Pat, you're correct. I mean, over the years, Hartford was known to be the place where guys wanted to go to. They had a winning culture. Guys wanted to come play here. That stopped happening. In part because, you know, Rangers, through some of their own mismanagement, really weren't handling some veteran players well, weren't giving people the opportunities. Or if they got recalled, now they're playing 3-5 minutes a game. How much can a player make a difference playing 3 to 5 minutes a game? Not much. And that definitely was a factor. And they made, like, for example, Joe Whitney a few years ago. What a disastrous signing that was. He wasn't interested playing into their role, working with younger players, and he was getting a real good AHL coin that he was getting paid, and he really wasn't interested in it, and it was a bad mix. It was, you know, the second shortest reign for a captain, you know, among the last 4 years of trading captains, which is another big mistake the Rangers have made. 4 years in a row, four different captains were traded. You know, just astonishing. I mean, Bobby Butler, before he left, said to me last year, you know, something happens rarely, except here where they do it every year. So that has certainly been a major, you know, I think, change. And I hopefully, you know, and getting Stephen Fogarty, and I got Stephen a laugh about it. I said, Stephen, did you ask get a no-trade clause, you know, for this year, you know, being the captain? But, you know, he laughed. But he said, I thought about it for a few minutes, but I'm comfortable with it. And he certainly has done a very good job so far, along with Boone Evans as his assistant and Ryan Lindgren, that really have changed some of the culture in the locker room, which I think has been a big help as well.
We're chatting with Jerry Cantlin. You can find his work and coverage of the Hartford Wolfpack at howlings.net. I mean, you talk about the stability in the roster. How about the stability in net with Igor Shesterkin coming into the weekend, tied with the third best goals against average in the American Hockey League? And I don't think we can understate how big of a difference a performance, consistently like that from a goaltender can make for a club.
Well, certainly getting good goaltending is an absolutely critical. There is no question about it. I was before getting prepared for the interview with you guys, Pat and Dave, it's been really 5 years since we've had a real competent goaltender that team players trusted. And that was Jan Denis, and helped lead them into the playoffs that last year. And they made it all the way to the conference final before losing to the eventual Calder Cup champion, Manchester Monarchs that year. But since then, it has been just a horror show in net. I mean, Magnus Helberg had one good year. The next year, he couldn't stop a beach ball. Mackenzie Skapski's career just fizzled out before our eyes. Last year, Dustin Karski and Marek Mazanek, neither player seemed to be very interested in being there. And it showed and reflected. And they had real problems stopping the puck. And that just wears on T's confidence. This group this year with Igor Shesterkin and Adam Huska and that, they are very confident, both of them, because both of them have been just fantastic. They're two very different goaltenders. Shesterkin has been, he's as calm as anybody in net. It's like he's on a Sunday stroll. He just walks around. He's very confident. He's compact, very composed, economy of movement as a goaltender, and is able to make those big time saves. He made one the other night on Derek Walker from Syracuse. Turnaround point blank shot, butterfly glove save that was incredible. That's an NHL play. He's made many others, and he certainly gives that confidence. Huska's a different variety. Bigger kid, very athletic. I've had the privilege of seeing him play at the University of Connecticut for the last 3 years. He is one of the best-kept secrets because it's a seventh-round draft pick, and he's just been superb. He's fearless, willing to do anything in making a save. When I was in Laval a couple weeks ago, he made a save on Jake Evans. About a minute 18 to go in the game, have a chance to go, just stoned him, just came across the net, made a superb play. Olofsson had a great pass from Yannicka Ouellette, and beautiful open blade redirect, think it's going for the top shelf. The kid slides himself across and stops it. I've seen him do this several times when he's at UConn. This is really a tandem. They haven't had a tandem like this. Probably the last two tandems I can remember. One would be when they had Doug Grummet-Morris and David Lemieux in net. They also were the smartest goalie tandem in the history of the AHL, probably combined IQ of 5,000. And the great combination of Jason LaBarbera and Steve Valiquette back in 2004-05, which was the best start the Wolfpack have ever had. And this group, statistically, has a better mark than that group. So there's certainly that aspect of having that goaltending is breeds confidence, and it's really reflective of how well the team has got off a good start here in the quarter pole of the season.
Just I wanted to touch real quick on the Vitaly Kravtsov situation. He went back about a month ago to the KHL. What is, with the dust settled now, what is your take on that overall situation?
I think Vitaly Kravtsov's got a lot of growing up to do. He really needs to learn that the world is not going to be coming at his feet all the time. And that's a difficulty. I can say, guys, he played five games. I didn't see any of the player that we saw at last year's World Junior Championship. Didn't see a guy who was the seventh round overall pick in the NHL draft. He did nothing. He didn't want to play. It wasn't. He wasn't being catered to. They shifted the lines around one game in an effort to get him to play. He was a Boone Evans and Matt Beleski. They shifted everything around to try to get him to play hockey. He just didn't play. He got benched in his first game. First game. Second period, they benched him, sat him there. Guys, I've watched about 10,000 hockey games in my life. I never saw a first-round pick in his first game. Hey, sometimes a guy might get sat in his 10th, his 20th, 30th game. Not playing well. You try to get the message. First game? Second period? That just tells you volumes. It's not easy. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes things here with contracts and promises and things that expectations that he had coming here that obviously weren't met to his satisfaction. He's also 19 years old, and, when we were 19, we thought we knew the world, but we didn't. But, he's here at a professional level, and he just didn't show anything. So he went back to Tractor Chelyabinsky in the KHL, and in fact, they even sent him to their Vyacha League, which is the Russian equivalent of the American Hockey League, for a game in Chelyabinsk. So, there's room for growth there with Kratsov. The Rangers line is they still talk he's a part of the family. But privately, I would think they have to be very disappointed that he's taken this route. Because you look at, guys like Filippito, who came down at the beginning of the year in Hartford. If anybody could be upset, he could. He spent most of last year in the National Hockey League. He came to Hartford. He worked his keister off, played very well, got his game up. And look how well he's playing up in New York. It's an exact example of what the AHL is for now in the modern era in 2019. Filippito did all the right things. He's in the NHL. Vitaly Krasov didn't want to do anything. He's back in the KHL. At some point, he'll have to make that decision as to which he wants to do.
And just wrapping up, the general state of affairs. How would you kind of characterize the state of the Rangers-Hartford affiliation? And where does it go from here?
I would say, Pat, at this point, the affiliation is strong. Pat and Dave, because I think the Rangers like the Roy. The problem is what to do with the building. Having the privilege of being up and seeing Laval a couple weeks ago, the Place Bell is just a beautiful, gorgeous arena. Has all the wonderful new amenities. The training facilities are top of the line. They have none of that in Hartford, to be very honest. In comparison to what's now available in the American Hockey League, from Place Bell to down in San Antonio or in Austin, Texas, or even in Wilkes-Barre, you just have these fantastic facilities. And they're going to be in Palm Springs, California, in 2 years, where they're going to build a brand new standalone training facility next door to a brand new arena. Every day, they do not make decisions about getting the reboot done in Hartford. That train keeps leaving the station, puts them further and further behind. The latest I can tell you, having talked to Mike Freeman, the executive director of the Connecticut Regional Development Authority, they're still working on, making some sort of pitch within the calendar year 2020 and getting money to start a reboot. But there is nothing written in stone, and there's a lot of political jockeying. And it's really has all be done through the Connecticut legislature. They're going to make the final call whether they're going to put the sort of money and investments needed in the building and handle some of the stickier issues, such as the atrium, which they don't own. It's owned by another company, Northam Corporation. The governor's office, as we speak, I can exclusively tell you guys, they've begun talks with Northland. Where they're going to go, nobody knows, but at least they're talking at this point to try to see if they can find a common ground. They had an offer for $4.5 million a few months ago. They rejected it. They've been talking for 2.5 years and have never accepted one offer that's ever been offered at them. So there's a lot of room to grow on that. The bigger problem is on the outskirts of all of this and what's going on in Long Island.
Yeah, something's got to give eventually, and it's going to be interesting, as you say, Jerry, to see how that all kind of shakes out, especially with what's happening in New York and with the Islanders franchise as well. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Thanks again for joining us, Jerry. I always appreciate your time, your insight.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, guys. Always a pleasure. Wish we could talk for another hour, but then again, you know, Dave might, you know, have to cut us off. But I appreciate the time, gentlemen. Great night. We'll talk soon.
This is episode 7 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. Again, you can find us there, sportspodcastingnetwork.com. You can get us on Apple Music, on Spotify, on Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcast. And also, don't forget to get at us on social media at Around the A Pod. You can email us as well, aroundtheapod@gmail.com. We're always looking for topics or guest suggestions or just any feedback you want. We're always happy to listen. Big thanks to Jerry Cantlin for joining us again and filling us in on how things are going in Hartford. I said at the start of that interview that Hartford was having a pretty good season, but they have slipped a little bit of late, still, though, holding on to that division lead. So just to be clear, they've hit a bit of a rough patch, but compared to how that team has done in the last couple of years, it's obviously a marked improvement for them.
Yeah, it certainly is. They won 8 of their first 9. Now they're in a little bit, like you said, a little bit of a slide, 3 wins in their past 11. But, you know, when you get off to that kind of start, you're able to absorb a lot. And even in this slide here, they've had 4 shootout losses. So you're still picking up a few points here and there. So, yeah, they're hanging in there, and it's a tough division, but they're still, as of right now, atop the division, and we'll see how they can handle things.
All right, let's get to a bit of a state of the season through the first quarter. Let's look at maybe some surprises and some, you know, disappointments. Perhaps let's start with perhaps the biggest surprise for you through the start of the season so far.
Well, yeah, the 19-game mark is sort of the official quarter point for teams that, at least the teams on the 76-game schedule. For the teams on the 68-game schedule, it's 17 is the quarter point. But, you know, the same point stands. This is the time of the year now where you're starting to see some teams, you start to see what they're about. Now you're through that initial first month with the light schedule and with the roster upheaval. So you get a little bit better sense. The team, look at Syracuse. They got off to a kind of a slow start, and they've heated up lately. They swept home with Hartford last week. They've won 3 in a row going into this week, and so they're kind of making their move. But I think the team for me that's a surprise is, like I said, the Hartford Wolfpack. They've just been a great start so far. You know, coming from where they were the last number of seasons, where it was just so bad, so many nights, it was just. They're often painful to watch, quite frankly. And this year, they're just a much better team. And I think Shesterkin, obviously, is a big part of that. Having a goalie can certainly cover up a lot of flaws. You know, it's sort of the camouflage, you know, for a roster that maybe if there are a few deficiencies, he can paint over them. And he's done that. He's been phenomenal. He's viewed as the heir apparent to Kane Henrick in New York. And I think if you're a Rangers fan, you have every right to be excited with what you've seen from him so far. So I would go with the Wolfpack as my real surprise team.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to go over in the West and look at a team like Tucson Roadrunners, who finished 5th in the division last season. And it is still early, but 8-2 over their last 10 games. They've only lost 4 times in, you know, over the course of 18 games. To start the season, they're scoring a bunch, 66 goals for. They're not allowing a lot of goals, 47 against. So, you know, things looking pretty good down in the desert. That's certainly one of the big surprises for me.
Yeah, that's a really good choice as well, I think. Their team, you know, you look at them, there's not a ton of guys on that roster that jump off the page, but well-coached. They play their systems really well, they've had a real nice start to the season for sure. You know, that division's always really tough. Those 7 teams out there in the Pacific Division play each other so much, and the rivalries are really intense. And, you know, Tucson's also a situation where they generally get teams back-to-back home. So that can be a bit of a challenge at times. It's hard to sweep a team back-to-back games, but Tucson has been phenomenal this year. They won 8 of 10 at home, and they're just off to a great start. They have another big week coming up, but you know, they're building themselves a nice cushion so far.
Yeah, and I also am a little bit surprised with my hometown team here in Belleville. I think a lot of people expected a lot more of the Belleville Senators to start the season, but here they are, you know, kind of middling in the division. And, you know, they're seventh in the division, but they're, you know, only two spots and a Utica win, as we mentioned earlier in the show, out of a playoff spot. So I've been surprised by them, but at the same time, they're starting to surprise people in a good way of late, because with all of the injuries they've dealt with and call-ups to Ottawa they've dealt with, I mean, at the 50-day mark of the AHL season, they had 50 transactions. And that's unheard of for, you know, a lot of people around this league. But here they were going on the road last weekend to Binghamton and Lehigh Valley. They picked up two wins when they probably shouldn't have, and they did it with only really, really one everyday defenseman in the lineup in Jack Doherty. Jonathan Aspero played as well, but he's kind of like a seventh defenseman for them. And the rest of the guys on defense that night were either on PTOs or ECHL call-ups. In fact, Frank Corrado, who is on a PTO, wore an A for their last game in Lehigh Valley. So, again, surprising in a good way right now are the Belleville Senators, and it'll be interesting to see if they can keep things going.
Yeah, it will. I mean, Troy Mann has done a phenomenal job, I think, given what he's had to deal with there the first year and change of his time in Belleville. He has his hands full there, as much as any coach in this league, quite frankly. And it's been kind of a real roller coaster. I mean, that's a team. I watch Belleville, and I'm not really sure what they have, and simply because they don't have the same roster from night to night. And I thought your Frank Corrado little piece of trivia was just really interesting, because when's the last time a guy in a PTO wore a letter for a team? I mean, yeah, I don't even know how far back he would have to go. But that kind of sums up the state of affairs for where Belleville is at now, and in terms of their health and their lineup and their roster and their parent team and everything else. They have a lot on their plate, but so far I think they're at least able to hold their own, and they're going in this week only 2 points out of a playoff spot. So if you can at least in the early going, not dig yourself a hole, you can make your run later on in the season. And, if they can do that, they should be in good shape, because quite frankly, when you're dressing that kind of lineup, going into a place like Lehigh Valley, especially, and you're able to pull a win out, you got to just take those 2 points and pack them on the bus and get back to Belleville as soon as you can, because that's not easy to do. And they managed to pull it off, and they have another tough week coming up. But, if they can have another similar week, they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, they absolutely will. Let's just quickly look at one of the big matchups this coming weekend, a playoff rematch between Providence and Charlotte. What do you make of that matchup?
Yeah, both teams, they met the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs this past April. Charlotte took this series. It was best of five. They took it in four games. Providence put up a pretty good fight, though, and both teams obviously have had a fair amount of turnover, Charlotte especially, and it's been a tough go for Charlotte. They just are... And coming in this week, coming off a five-game road trip, they managed to pick up two wins on that road trip. All things considered, not too bad, but it's been a struggle for them. You talked to Ryan Warsawski. I talked to some of the players on their team, Alex Djelkovic, and they're very honest about it. They're not real happy with where they're at. They've admitted that it's been a bit of a tough road so far, but they have a tough week. They started the week with a pair of games against the Cleveland Monsters, who are a tough opponent, and now they get Providence coming in for a pair of games. So, you come off a five-game road trip, and then you get those two teams, four games in 1 week at home. That's not an easy schedule, but Charlotte has to make their move this week, and they really have to start to make up some ground, because they're already 7 points out of a playoff spot going into the week, and it's not going to get any easier, especially against the Providence Bruins team that, as is typical with them, is just a solid team once again. They're only 2 points out of the playoffs going into the weekend. As usual, head coach Jay Leach there has just done a great job. The team's always well prepared. They managed to handle call-ups almost at the rate of the Belleville Senators. and has managed to have a good team that develops and wins at the same time.
Yeah, so that's one of the big matchups that we will recap perhaps next week. Lining up some good stuff for next week as well. Stay tuned to our social channels, again, at Around the A Pod for updates on who you can expect on episode number 8 as we get set to wrap things up here on episode number 7. For Patrick Williams, I'm David Foote. Thanks again so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week on Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.